Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the best animated shows ever, so far, with MC and Troy.
I'm Troy.
And I'm MC.
And this is the best animated shows ever, so far, where we watch, discuss, and rank every animated show ever, eventually. And there's a third person with us today.
That's me. I'm the third person.
It is. That was perfect. That's our standard, like, awkward intro for a guest. Listen, I could do
excellent.
A long spiel where I explained who you were beforehand, but I think it's just fun to have you say, it's me. It's me is Rob in this case.
Yes, I am Rob. Hello.
Rob, I know from over at the greater Geek to Geek media network universe, where I first found you because you had a show called Comic Box, and I started listening to your prep episodes for comics or for comic book movies. Those are the first things I listened to, Rob.
They were the most popular by far, were those in the review episodes. Sometimes I dug deeper into other comic book things or character origins, but yeah, the movies absolutely gave us an easy place to get content, because we knew people would be like, who's this Doctor Strange guy? And so we could talk about who Doctor Strange is. Or even now that the podcast has shifted over to a show called And Sometimes Rob, where it has no set publishing schedule and no set topic each week, we've still done a little bit of that. We've still done some reviews. And then Beej over from the Geek to Geek podcast wanted me to do a All About Moon Knight episode because that Disney Plus show is coming.
Yeah.
So
we
did a Who's Moon Knight?
Super episode. Informative. That character, I am guilty of assuming, like, oh, he's just kind of like Batman, but in a white outfit instead of a black outfit. And dang, there's a lot going on in his story that I had no idea until I heard your episode. There's not a Moon Knight cartoon, is there?
No, but he has appeared in cartoons before.
Okay. That would be a weird one to transfer to cartoons, I guess. He's darker than I imagined. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Moon Knight. I got distracted. we're here to talk about Silver Surfer. So, Rob, I asked Rob if he'd want to join us, and you basically said you would join for anything comic book related, but you specifically put Silver Surfer out there as a potential option. We actually rolled. So our standard is we pick four shows, and then we roll a die and see which one comes up. And we did that, and it happened to be Silver Surfer that got picked, which is fantastic since it's the one you suggested.
The dice is actually still there from when I rolled it, and it's still on the number one, which we rolled last week.
See, I thought for sure it was going to be Spectacular Spider-Man, because it seems like we always roll a three. But in any case, Rob, I guess we'll hand it to you there, because to start the episode off, I know you did some digging and dug up some info on just the Silver Surfer kind of in general, so I guess I will kick it over to you to educate us here.
Okay, so it's like a mini episode of explaining who sort of where the Silver Surfer comes from. The story we'll get into when I imagine we talk about the comic. The Silver Surfer, certainly one of my favorite Marvel comic book characters. I'm a big fan of the Marvel cosmic stuff, and he has been around for a really long time. He was created by Jack Kirby and first appeared in Fantastic Four number 48 in 1966, and he's listed as number 41 on IGN's Top 100 Comic Book Heroes. Fun fact, though, at the time, in 1966, the way Marvel comics were done by, say, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby was what they called the Marvel method of comics, where they would work together to come up with the ideas. Stan Lee would write a sort of synopsis, but then it was really Jack Kirby, the artist, who draws the whole thing, kind of decides what each scene is going to look like, the actual action that's going to take place. And then Stan Lee would come back in, look at what was drawn, and then he fills in the plot and the dialogue based on the drawings. Whereas today, artists go off of complete scripts that will even give page breakdowns of how many panels and stuff. That was not the Marvel method. For that particular story, Fantastic Four number 48, which introduces Galactus and the Silver Surfer, Stan Lee did not know that the Silver Surfer was a part of the story. Like, Jack Kirby just sort of threw that character in there. They hadn't discussed it at all.
Hang on. So the synopsis was just like an alien shows up and tries to eat Earth and the Fantastic Four fight him off. And then Jack Kirby was like, what if another alien?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So here's the Stan Lee quote, and I will do my best Stan Lee. It is early here. I will do my best Stan Lee, which is, there, in the middle of the story we had so carefully worked out, was a nut on some sort of flying surfboard. I thought, Jack, this time you've gone too far. Excelsior. It's a terrible Stan Lee, and I apologize for doing it.
So good.
But yeah, so his reaction is basically anyone who did not grow up, because when you're a kid, none of this seems weird, right?
Yeah.
But if you're an adult and you're like, it's a silver dude on a surfboard that flies, like today, that seems like a really stupid idea. That was Stan Lee's reaction in 1966. The reason it's a surfboard is because Jack Kirby was sick of drawing spaceships.
So he just wanted a way to draw just a dude flying through space instead of a spaceship?
He was like, what else could I do? Yeah, but he wanted a second character because he figured a character like Galactus would have some sort of herald, and then it gave him another way to explore sort of the ethos and that comparison between the people on Earth and this giant space creature. But in the end, Stanley actually loved the Silver Surfer so much that as a general rule, nobody else was supposed to be allowed to write the character.
Besides Stan.
He was actually really upset. In 1987 was when the Silver Surfer got his second solo series, and they gave it to a different writer, a guy named Steve Englehart. And he was actually like pissed off about this because he wanted to be the only person to ever write this ridiculous character flying around on a surfboard.
That's great.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is important to throw out there when we start talking about the contrast between maybe his comic book origins and the cartoon is, since his very first appearance where they show up on Earth, Galactus and the Silver Surfer, his stories were always about him being on Earth. Like Stanley was not writing crazy space adventures with the Silver Surfer, which is kind of what he's most known for. He was stuck on the planet Earth. Steve Englehart, the guy who was writing, actually got sick of some of those restrictions. Like, he was allowed to write it, but he had to follow all the established rules. So after 31 issues, he left, and a guy named Jim Starlin took over.
Oh.
And if you are a comic book fan, this raises the hairs on the back of your neck. He is the guy who wrote the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, Infinity Crusade, Infinity Abyss, Adam Warlock. He's the guy who sort of created that giant space story that pushed the Marvel Cinematic Universe to where it was able to get. He's the guy that created Thanos in an Iron Man issue, of all places, because he just had that character and he wanted to ham-fist it wherever he could. But Jim Starlin took over the book, and that's where you got Thanos, Adam Warlock, Drax the Destroyer, and that all became intertwined with the Silver Surfer story, because those were his characters that he was allowed to sort of take with him wherever he... Again, those were Iron Man characters that he brought with him and pushed into the Silver Surfer universe. And then a guy named Ron Mars took over, and those were the two sort of working hand in hand when we got the Infinity Trilogy, when we got that big Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet kind of story. And that was in 1990.
Okay.
And that is where the Silver Surfer exploded, and he got a video game in 1990 that nobody knows about. I believe it was only on Nintendo.
There was a guy named Troy Dunham, needed some answers, how would he find them? Just Google that stuff all day long. Google that person, Google that place, Google it all, cause there is no place to remember any reason, remember any why. All we do know is that we're gonna die, yeah, I'm gonna die, yeah, you're gonna die, yeah, Troy, you're gonna die.
There is an NES game out there for the Silver Surfer. If I remember correctly, it's sort of a side-scrolling...
Oh, it's a shooter. Space. Of course.
Yep.
It's like Galaxian? Is that the one?
Galaga?
Well, it's the side-scrolling shooter. But yeah, of course it would be. You're flying on your surfboard sideways across the screen and shooting fish, according to the screenshot that I pulled up. But fish and lizards.
Yeah.
You got to be more than that.
Yeah. So he had a... But there was a Silver Surfer video game in 1990, and then he got his own trading cards in 1992, and then following that, because of how long it takes for, you know, cartoons to become a thing, that was that Silver Surfer renaissance that gave us the cartoon we're going to talk about today.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know, I was trying to think of where I would have been with the Silver Surfer when this show came out. Because this show is 98, I want to say.
Yeah, 98.
Yes.
Yeah, February 7th, 1998 was the first episode. My dad liked comics, but he wasn't like, he wasn't buying comics. He just, like, he grew up reading comics. And so every once in a while, I would have comics around when I was a kid. There's a particular issue of a Superman Green Lantern crossover where they're fighting a big robot that I remember. And partially I remember it because there's a part where Green Lantern's painting his girlfriend and she's naked. And like 7-year-old Troy was like, oh my God. But I didn't have a lot of comics. So I don't think I would have known anything about Silver Surfer when the show came out. Unless maybe I saw that NES game like at, you know, at Blockbuster. And then I was thinking about it further and I'm like, do I know anything about Silver Surfer now? And I read the Mike Allred comic run about a year or two ago, as somebody recommended that. It might actually have been you recommended that somewhere, Rob, possibly.
It was, yes. It is one of the two things. When people want to know about the character, I either suggest picking up Infinity Gauntlet and they call them Epic trades now. They're larger than regular trade paperbacks, but there's one on Silver Surfer just called Infinity Gauntlet, sort of tells it's the other half of that big crossover. And then the Dan Slott Mike Allred thing, which is very like Doctor Who.
Yeah, I was gonna say the line I have in my head was somebody recommended it and said it was like Doctor Who, so I think it probably was you that recommended it and I just forgot that.
Yes,
it was.
Until
mid conversation. But I read that a year or two ago, and other than that, I mean, he's someone that I feel like I vaguely knew of, but maybe it's just because like his name is Silver Surfer and what I knew about him was that he was silver and a surfer, so maybe that I just kind of knew he existed. And then there's the movie, Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer, where he's very stoic. I guess he's stoic in the cartoon, but in the movie, I don't think he has a single line. He just stands there a lot and looks intense.
I think he does because I believe he's voiced by Lawrence Fishburne.
Really? I just watched that movie the other day, but I wasn't... I sat down to watch it to pay close attention to it to kind of do a book report on it here, and it just totally lost my interest. So it would not surprise me if I missed that.
Yeah, they very much, I think, played it off of very differently than the comics because they're like, he's an alien. He wouldn't speak the language.
Which makes
sense.
So
he just flies around.
He has the power cosmic, so he could speak whatever language he wants.
Yes, he could. But instead, he wants to have chase scenes with the Human Torch for some reason.
Yeah
that movie's not great, but the image of him when he melts into the board and flips out the other side of it, that's super cool, and I will
yes,
always
is.
Give the movie that pass of like that scene is dope. Awesome, let's get into it. Let's talk about Silver Surfer season 1 episode 1, The Origin of the Silver Surfer, part 1, right after these messages.
We've set up new ways that our listeners can interact with us. So Twitter and Instagram have been there for a while. We've got an email account. All of that's basesfcast. The email's at basesfcast@gmail.com. But now there's a Facebook page. So you can go to facebook.com/basesfcast and you can find the page for the show. And then there's also on that page, there's a button that says join group. We'll probably watch the group more than the page. To get to the group, you do have to know what one of our names are. If you don't at this point, I'm a little hurt. We also have a YouTube account. If you search BaseSFcast on YouTube, then you'll find the episodes, but on YouTube. I was going to say, but in video format, but it's not really in video format because we don't record our faces. I guess we do record our faces. We're not putting up videos. Anyway, search BaseSFcast on YouTube. And then the final thing is, MC, you want to tell them about the voice messages?
Oh, yeah, that's right. On Anchor, you can actually go onto our podcast and it's a button. It's just a button that they can press.
It's just a button. It says send voice message.
And you click on that and you can record a little voice message for us. In fact, what we really are looking for is for people to drop in their opinion on the show that we're currently watching. And we will drop a few of those into episode 3.
Yep.
Probably right before we rank the show.
Yeah, I think that's the place to do it. It's kind of as we're wrapping up our thoughts on the show, then we can get a little bit of your thoughts on the show. And the page for that is just anchor.fm/basesfcast. Just whatever website you're on, put basesfcast at the end of it. Unless it's an adult website. Don't do that.
I mean.
My name's Tyler, and I host the podcast Too Young for This Hit, where I watch movies I've never seen before with guests who love them. So what kind of movies do we watch? We watch mostly like classics movies, you know, like
Escape from New York,
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure,
Alien,
Wayne's World, Party Time, Excellent,
Aliens,
Smokey and the Bandit,
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
In addition to talking about movies, we also talk about cats. A lot. For pretty much no reason. You can find Too Young for This Hit and tons of other great podcasts at probablywork.com.
And we're back.
We are back, as I said, to discuss The Origin of the Silver Surfer, Part 1, which is Season 1, Episode 1 of The Silver Surfer. Rob, just so you know, our breakdown of the show is very loosey-goosey. We could do like a formal summary at the top where we tell people roughly what the show's about, but usually we don't. And usually when we try it, something like the Silver Surfer gets created in this episode because Galactus wants to eat a planet and someone on the planet's like, please don't. And so he becomes a Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
And with that, MC, yeah. you want to dive us in?
Well, we start off hearing a voiceover, and it turns out that it's the Watcher,
mm-hmm.
Who is a being who, I guess, just sees over a part of the galaxy or the universe, and he just observes, and he's been watching all these different races and stuff, and essentially two races are trying to like take over the universe, the Skrull and mm-hmm. Kree.
This had those me hooked immediately when this episode started, because I'm like, holy smokes, we're starting with the Skrull and the Kree, like that's your kickoff point for this. I mean, it goes through a lot of, like, montage around space and showing all these different worlds and stuff. But then it gets to the Kree Empire and the Skrull Empire, like, right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is great for, like, modern... Like, I always say this on my own podcast, but how unbelievable it is to me as a fan of this source material that is the case. That they start out by talking about the Kree and the Skrull.
Mm-hmm.
And if this were 1998, you'd be like, okay, great, whatever, just blue people and green people, you know? But, like, modern audiences that are going to come to this on Disney Plus are going to know who the Kree and the Skrull are, yeah. And it blows my mind that alone already hooks you on this show.
Yeah, especially if they've seen Captain Marvel.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. This totally, like, works in conjunction with Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
I saw a headline the other day that said Captain Marvel 2 is going to be less controversial than Captain Marvel 1. Made me mad. That movie shouldn't be controversial. Sorry. Anyway.
Controversial in that they made the Skrulls the good guys.
Yeah, if that's what they're talking about, the controversy is like, man, can you believe we made evil race like sympathetic? How controversial? But okay. Fair.
Yeah, but I doubt it.
We've literally had a movie where the Kree... what's his name? The guy with Jubal? The hammer.
Oh, Ronan the Accuser.
Ronan.
Yeah, he was the bad guy in a whole movie. Like, of course they're gonna make him the bad guy again. But,
yeah. I mean, the whole thing they did was that the accusers were like religious extremists.
Yeah.
Right.
They were not typical of the population.
Now, not knowing the usual way of the, because I know we're running a synopsis of the episode.
This is typical.
When do we?
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say, when do we get to talk about the opening music?
Oh man, yeah. Oh,
should that have been first?
Yeah, we skipped over that.
Because my God, and a lot of my notes end up referring to this as like, this is not a children's program.
Yeah.
Like, this was a Saturday morning cartoon. It opens with, like, an orchestra, like a choir singing Latin or... Can I swear?
Yeah. If you swear too much, I'll just beep it, but that's fine. I tried to make this okay. Super family-friendly for a while, and then we talked about Pokemon, and I questioned whether Mewtwo does dirty deeds with his lack of sexual organs, and I realized that it was probably a lost cause.
Does he fuck though?
Does okay. he fuck though?
Well, I can do my best here. But there's a choir singing like I think Latin.
Yeah.
At the start of this thing, and it's like super heavy inks, and Galactus is all CGI, and just like knowing what you're in for, you know, it from that opening music, is it perfectly sets the stage for the type of story. Like after that music. It's not surprising that it opens with this long dramatic narration and the way that it's written as well. They're using words kids do not know. Like I have notes for every single episode of some of the just the words that I'm hearing them use. And these are not words that kids understand. Like they have to pick it up from context because they're talking almost Shakespearean prose.
That's what I was gonna say. Is I didn't take note of specific vocabulary, but the like speech patterns oh my gosh, why can't I think of the planet? It's not Shambhala, that's the girl. What's this planet called?
It starts with the Z.
Zenla.
It's Zenla. Yeah, it's Zenla. Jeepers. Sorry, I didn't know if I was supposed to help you.
No, yes, you can just watch me struggle, or you can help.
Take away your agency.
The speech patterns on Zenla are very Shakespearean, and I didn't make note of specific vocabulary, but I guess right off the bat, like, Silver Surfer, the word you think of is Herald. Eight-year-old Troy didn't know what Herald was, like...
Yeah, yeah. And with that narration, and then when they get to the planet, like, it's just this super exposition dump.
Yeah.
There's so much information they're pushing on you, and as a kid, I actually remember kind of bouncing off the show as a kid because of that, because I'm like, oh man, this is so wordy and they're just people talking and they're trying to explain all of these things. And as a kid, I kind of knew them already from the comics, but it didn't pull me in the way that it would pull me in as an adult.
Yeah. It is a dramatically intense opening, which then transitions down to the surface of Zenla where we meet Norn Ran and we meet, Shambhala.
Well, before we get there, after the Skrull and Kree empires, it's like new power has entered the sector, and that's when we're introduced to Galactus.
I guess I can't skip Galactus.
Yeah, he's like first couple of minutes. It's like here's Galactus.
Yep,
he's eating planets.
Is this how Galactus eats planets in comics? Big tubes suck out the energy from the core.
Kind of, sort of.
Okay.
Yeah. He assembles a giant machine that sucks out a planet's nutrients and then leaves it as a husk. He doesn't physically, like, take bites out of... I don't remember the name of the character, and it's a complete side thing. There's an episode of the original Tick cartoon where there's a character that is supposed to be Galactus who comes to eat the Earth, and the Tick agrees to be sort of his herald.
Okay.
And... in the end, he ends up just taking a small bite out of the moon, and from that point forward in that show, there's a small bite taken out of the moon.
Yeah,
now that show did a couple things like that, because it had the guy who tried to write his name in the moon too, and it did the same.
Yes,
thing.
Chairface. So there's a moon with a half with a bite taken out of it, and like CH and half of an A in their moon on the Tick.
This lets me know that I definitely don't know. Like, okay, like I said with Silver Surfer, I felt like maybe I knew something about him. Galactus, same thing. But I definitely didn't know much about Galactus, because what I knew about him was that he eats planets. And I was definitely imagining him with, like, a fork and knife, like, sitting down and slicing up the planet.
He doesn't actually eat planets. It's the energy from the planets that he eats.
And that's, I did not know that. I didn't know that going into watching this cartoon this week, so shame on me.
I think they also show him as physically eating planets in, like, the Marvel Lego games.
That could be why,
like,
I
they
think
show him
that.
With, like, a fork and knife. Yeah.
I had the idea from hearing Planet Eater, and then I saw it in Lego and was like, well, it must be true. They wouldn't put in a Lego video game if it wasn't comic accurate.
Yeah, and that's always been, in the comic books, that's sort of the gist. He's a dude who needs to eat planets to survive, but they build him up as this, like, galactic force of nature where, as the universe naturally grows and expands, he is there to meet that expansion.
Right.
And when he first showed up, he has, like, shorts and, like, a t-shirt version of his costume on, with, like, bare legs and arms and a big G on his chest.
That sounds adorable.
Which is really weird. And the other thing is, he's supposedly one of these beings that's so incredible that each civilization actually sees him differently. Like, it's what your brain can comprehend. It doesn't quite jive with everything, because, like, in the Fantastic Four, he gets punched by the Thing, but if he appears as a cloud of, you know, gas, which I think is what they did in the movie,
yeah,
like, that's not a punchable thing. So I don't.
But does he always have, like, that big helmet thing that he has on with the antlers?
I certainly hope so.
That thing's so awesome.
It is so Jack Kirby.
It is very, like, ridiculous cosmic. Like, you look at that and you're like, this is clearly a ridiculous space creature.
Can we talk about how, because they've got a different animation style for Galactus in this show than they do for everyone else. They've actually gone and made him, like, CGI, and it's like, oh, this is, like, a completely different level character.
Yeah, that's something that
I really enjoy. That
really stands out about this show is that it blends traditional animation and, like, a cel-shaded CGI animation in, like, a really beautiful way.
Which was very 90s Fox Kids. Mm-hmm. They did the same on the Spider-Man cartoon, where whenever he was swinging through the city itself was CGI. Ooh. While Spider-Man was not.
That sounds cool.
If you guys remember, like, the opening of the show, I don't recall the X-Men cartoon doing much of it, but it was certainly a thing at the time where they didn't want to spend the money to go full CG, and they didn't, you know, well, I suppose you had Transformers Beast Wars
and Reboot
in the 90s.
Reboot was around too, and those shows Reboot. Don't hold up visually, whereas this one, I mean, the CGI in this still looks pretty good, and I think it's because of that cel-shaded look. Like, cel-shaded makes things relatively timeless to me.
That they also, like, limit it.
Mm, that's true.
It's not the whole show. It's just, like, little bits of it. So it's supposed to stand out. It's not supposed to look the same as everything else.
That is true.
Right. Yeah. And the rest of it has very much that heavy inks look that the X-Men cartoon first used, and was used less by the regular Spider-Man cartoon, more by the Spider-Man Unlimited cartoon that followed.
Yeah.
That was a sort of a pseudo sequel, but yeah, they have that really heavy inks that plays well off of the Jack Kirby designs that they use.
I love it. I love the chunky lines, and it's not just, like, edges of things, but, like, within the character, if they want to show a bit of shadow, they'll do, like, a super chunky line on someone's face to show the shadow, and it gets really cool.
Yeah. And the thing that they contrast all that, like, chunky lines with is, like, these bright colors everywhere. And it's just, like, really good, like, style. I reckon the whole show looks great still.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And again, that's Jack Kirby. If you go back and look at some of his artwork, which I imagine is going to be, we're going to see hints of that. I don't think they're going to go full Kirby on it, but the Eternals movie that's coming out, they're based on Jack Kirby creations.
You just made me more excited about that movie than I had been, just thinking of what the visuals of that movie might look like.
There are hints, and there's been some fan posters and things where in the background you maybe might see something silver streaking by.
Really?
In the background. Yeah, now those are fan posters. Okay. But if we're moving into the cosmic area and they own Fox now...
That's true. They got him back.
They do.
Yes, they do. Hopefully they
keep him, unlike Spider-Man, which is weird, all that stuff. Y'all, we have, so our meeting room gives us 40 minutes to record. We have 5 minutes left, and we are, like, 12 seconds into the episode. So I'm going to summarize the next scene quickly, and then we'll push forward from there. So basically, this planet is a super peaceful planet, and some Kree and Skrull show up, and immediately people are like, oh my god, they've brought their war here. But it turns out that this Kree and this Skrull are here as students, and Norrin Rad is a guy who takes away their weapons and is like, let me show you how cool weapons are here, and he just dissolves them. And it's like, now you have no weapons, because this is a planet of peace. And then the Watcher shows up and is like, hey, super cool planet of peace. My name's the Watcher. I don't interfere, but y'all about to get eaten by Galactus, so that sucks. I think he's basically like, sorry. He doesn't really give them anything to do about it.
Oh, yeah, no, he's like, I can't interfere.
I can't interfere, but you are going to be eaten. Goodbye.
Yeah, I can't interfere. I am going to give you this warning, but I'm going to give it to you at the last possible. Like, literally, as he's fading out, Galactus shows up through the clouds.
That's actually the funniest bit about it. It's like, he comes and warns them, and then as he's disappearing, it's Galactus's tubes flying through the atmosphere to eat their planet. Yeah.
Thanks for the heads like, up, oh, yeah, Watcher.
Yeah, you couldn't told us, like, half an hour ago. We could have got, like, half the planet off.
Except for they can't, because that's an important thing, is that apparently the people of Zenla don't really travel, because there's a part where Norrin Rand's like, man, this planet's way cooler than any other planet you've been to. And the Skrull's like, oh yeah, someday I'd love to hear about all your travels. And he does a little blush, and it's really, it's adorable. I didn't notice it the first time I watched it, and then I watched it again. I'm like, Norrin Rand does a little blush at that, because he's like, well, yeah. I haven't really traveled. He wants to know.
Because... dropping shade, like the sarcastic Skrull. Who, by the way, random thing, for either of you, were the voices of the Kree and Skrull strangely familiar to you?
They were, but I couldn't place them.
That is Sabretooth and Magneto from the X-Men cartoon.
Oh!
The Kree was the same voice as Sabretooth, and the Skrull is the same person that did Magneto. It's not like super dramatic, like, we must do this thing.
Yeah.
Reading up on the show, the animation was done by the same studio that did X-Men, and apparently the voice work must have been done, if not in the same recording studio, like right next door, because the thing I was reading was basically just like, when they needed a random voice actor, they almost always got somebody who was a regular on X-Men. So I just imagine that it was like popping your head out into the studio next door and being like, hey, anybody free? We just need like two lines real quick. Well, come over here,
I would think
Wolverine.
Their casting director is probably the same person, right? If it's the same. It was probably like Andrea Romano doing all the voice direction and casting for the DC cartoons.
That's a much more realistic answer of what happens. I like the version where they just poke their head in the recording studio. Casting happens, right? That's why someday I'm going to sneak into a recording studio and just hang around waiting for somebody to say, oh, we forgot to cast Spider-Man. Well, somebody come be Spider-Man real quick. And I'll be like, I am here. I can be Spider-Man.
It's their own version of Cerebro, where they put it on, and instead of finding mutants, it finds voice actors. And then they find whoever is closest, which happened to be the X-Men voice actors. So yes, I'm going to use my one swear word token here. What a shit warning from Galactus. What a shit warning. It's like a sign that says cliff ahead, but it's like hanging in the cliff. So when you see it, and then, and then the CGI apocalypse happens. That's one of the big notes that I have here. I say, it's the CGI apocalypse.
You know, I made note of the apocalypse actually in the next episode specifically, but it is every time that they destroy a planet on this show, it looks real good, because it is that combination of animation and CGI.
Yeah.
And you get to see buildings falling down, and these tubes, I don't think we've expressed. Okay, so the tubes that Galactus spits down, they're like, what, 30 feet in diameter? Like,
oh, no, they're going to be bigger.
They look like Doc Octopus's arms on steroids shooting down from space and drilling holes into the planet.
Yeah, they've got to be at least 100 meters across each.
That's too big. 100 meters?
Yeah, no.
What is that in silly fake measurements that we have here? That's like 300 feet, right?
A football field.
That's, maybe.
No, because there's a part in a later episode where he picks someone up and he takes them away, and it's clear that he doesn't just take them down the block. It's like a distance that he has to get away from this tube coming down. So it's like, these things are massive.
They're not small. And I think it's fair to say they're wrecking that planet as they come down and smash through the crust. I mean, I have a note in a second that we'll come back to. But I kind of feel like once he shows up, your planet is pretty screwed, whether or not he even completes his... Because he's literally shoving these giant tubes like down to, as they say, he's trying to get energy out of the Earth's core. Like, it doesn't just set down and turn on a vacuum. Like, he's destroying the tectonic plates of your planet.
Right.
So, and the tubes go, they're not just into the land. They, like, go into the water and everywhere. So, you actually see in, like, the destruction scenes, like, tsunamis and stuff hitting buildings and knocking them over and whatnot.
Yep.
It is good and panic-inducing, and it's nice to see that the characters respond appropriately, because nobody's like, even though the Watcher showed up, the Galactus is here, but the Watcher warned us, so we're okay. Everybody's like, oh no, this is terrible. But the Master, one of the guys on the planet, has an idea, which is he's got a big crystal that lets him talk to Galactus, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he tries to convince Galactus to spare their planet because for countless centuries, Zenla has, like, taught peace. Mm-hmm. And if he destroys the planet, he's dooming the universe or the galaxy, I guess.
Yeah, because now there won't be this place of peace to teach everyone else how to be peaceful. Like, look, they were about to solve the Kree-Skrull War. Like, if you'd just given us 20 minutes, we would have had the Kree and Skrull, like, baking pies together. They'll never be unified now. There's no way they'll ever become unified at this point.
Don't close the best Chinese restaurant in this side of New York. We have an A rating. There's nothing wrong. We're clean. You're just doing it because you're a meanie. And you want to buy up the property and put in a disco.
A Wendy's.
That's right.
And I don't know why. Reference.
Why Wendy's is what I'm angry at. If that was a reference, I didn't get it.
It's not a reference.
Chinese
it's
place
just,
closing and got really sad.
Yeah, well, it's just they're like, this place is amazing for countless centuries. It has been this place that everyone in the universe loved. Because it's them just like, they're totally tooting their own horn, right? They're being like, you can't destroy us. We're the most amazing. And in my head, for whatever reason, I was like, it's like, we're the best Chinese restaurant. But there's other Chinese restaurants. Like,
are there other planets of peace?
You have to assume if the universe is infinite.
Galactus
is where everybody starts
fighting back? McDonald's, but they're the McDonald's with the good play place.
The one that still has the N64 unit in the play place area, so you can go play some Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Essentially, what happens in this next scene is hilarious, because this projection of the Master, Galactus is like annoyed with it, so he like pushes cosmic energy into it, which destroys the crystal, which seems to knock everyone out.
Yeah, man, he just sent like a feedback pulse up the carrier away from the front deflector dish. I've seen that in Star Trek all the time. That's totally normal.
But yeah,
blows up the crystal, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is the worst. I believe this is where the Kree and Skrull, like, both hop in their ships to go do some space battling.
They're
space
agree.
Bros now.
Yeah. They're like, we can't let Galactus win. Let's go take him on. But first, the Master tries to, like, use a bit of the crystal to contact Galactus again.
And then Norrin takes that, right?
Yeah. The Master just collapses on the ground, and that's when the Kree and Skrull are like, we gotta stop Galactus, and run off to fight him.
Yep. So they're shooting him in space. It's not doing any good at all. Doesn't work. Can't fight a big spaceship with a planet-eating monster on top of it. You try real hard, Kree and Skrull. It's really admirable, but it's not gonna work.
But they get, like a decent amount of time in this episode dedicated to these two you know, races that we've been told, if we were actually listening at the beginning, like absolutely hate each other. And now they're like, but now we're going to work together. And they're like, I, you know, may you bring glory to the Kree Supremor. And the boy, is it the Skrull Magistrix?
The Skrull Mother. The Skrull Mother. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
But essentially, someone says, how do you make such a big ship? It is essentially the line. Because you see the ships that they get into, like, their ships aren't small. You see them get into them, and they're like these little tiny specks on the screen. And then you see these ships flying around Galactus's ship, and they just look like bugs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be a ship big enough to suck the energy out of a planet core, so.
Yeah, well, they do pretty much nothing and then get destroyed by one of Galactus's beams that he seems to use to destroy asteroids and stuff that get in his way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's the same lever for everything, if you guys notice.
Yeah, no, he has three levers, and yeah. I'm guessing a combination of their positions control everything in this ship.
It's like a Sega Genesis controller. All you need is three buttons.
I'm going to jump us forward a little bit. Norrin Rand is like, Master, this is all messed up. Hey, Watcher, help us out, please. And the Watcher just looks at him, and he's like, there must be something we can do. And the Watcher just looks at him.
He's kind of a dick about it, too. Like, I get it, because his planet, you know, but contrasting to who Norrin Rand sort of becomes... Like, he's really pissed off. Like, he's really just yelling really angrily at the Watcher, which is also reminiscent of the X-Men cartoon where everyone is always yelling at each other really angrily.
Yeah.
Did it strike either of you guys of him being... And again, I'm contrasting it with the original comic story that where this happens, but he's being kind of a dick about asking for help.
Yeah, he kind of was, but at the same time, it... You're also getting, like, the other side of it from the other two characters in this scene. One who, the Master, he's literally being all zen and sitting on the ground meditating. And, yeah.
That's true.
Shambhala.
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 Whatever.
Wait, what is it?
Shalabal. Yeah.
Yeah. She's trying to calm him down, and then he grabs the crystal at this point and runs off to, the spaceship and contacts Galactus.
See, I was a little confused here, because what he does is he's like, hey, Galactus, you need planets, I'll help you find them, which is a weird offer to make, because, like, he's a giant space monster who flies through space, and you're a guy who's never left your planet. So I wasn't sure if maybe there was a scene that we just didn't get to see where the Watcher was like, psst, Norrin, this is what you should say. Nope. Or if he just pulls that out and like makes up the idea on his own.
Yeah, no, he's just saying, not us, somebody else. I'll find him for you. Just leave me alone. You want planets to eat? I'll find you all the planets you want.
Well, actually, the idea that he has is he will save not only his civilization, but other civilizations by leading Galactus to planets that have an energy source, a massive energy source, but no civilization on it.
Yeah.
Right. But they wait to tell us that. Like, they wait for him to get back down, which I really liked, because you're sitting there saying, that was... No, I actually had a thing where I typed it out, and I was like, that's really dark, Norrin Rand, that you're just going to sacrifice thousands of other planets to save your own. But then I deleted it, because then we get the scene where he comes down and he actually explains, no, you guys don't get it. There's something I didn't tell him. So, like, he's trying to outsmart Galactus.
Yeah,
which is a lot of hubris, but I really liked that they didn't explain his plan until he gets back. And then they're like, what are you doing? And Shalabal's all like, you're not the man I knew.
Yeah, and then when after he explains, they're like, okay, reluctantly, and then Galactus sort of is, he has, like, essentially the evil guy speech.
Right. But yeah. This is a cool version of the evil guy speech, because it's an evil guy speech that is like, this is how I'm evil, because I'm going to do something really evil. But also, let me just catalog all your superpowers for you so that little kids who are watching this at home can go, oh, cool, that's what he can do.
Why would Galactus mention that the Silver Surfer can heal people?
Or that he doesn't need to eat. Like, that's a weird line. Like, just so you know, you'll never be hungry again.
Why?
Oh, hungry, I get that, thirsty.
I get that part. I get him being like, because don't bother with any of that. That's not your job anymore. Your job isn't to take care of yourself. You don't need to eat. You don't need to breathe. If you need to recharge, you know, it's coming from the
cosmic
stars.
Energy.
I have a question. If Galactus can use his great cosmic power to make it so Norrin Rand doesn't need sustenance to survive, why doesn't he just do it to himself?
Because Norrin Rad's a little dude.
But so, if size matters, then it's not that he doesn't need no sustenance, it's that the galactic energy can supplement the sustenance, which means if he was cut off from Galactus's great cosmic power, would then he need sustenance again?
I'm going to say yes.
I believe that's brought up at some point as well, when he does actually lose his powers.
Oh yeah, I forgot the episode where he goes to the best Chinese place in New York, and he's gonna go there, but then it's not there anymore, so he has to settle for Wendy's. But he gets a shake, and it's not too bad. If you dip your fries in it.
Doesn't have
I haven't done that
place,
since
though.
I was like 6 years old.
And now you have to.
I just remembered that that's the thing you were supposed to do. Now I have to. Like, there's a Wendy's
so
in
you
my
have
small
this...
town.
So you have the strength to seek out other Chinese restaurants to be closed.
But yeah, he goes through like a whole list of things, and then he's like, you can transmute elements is one of them. Because
kids know what transmute means, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Cosmic bolts.
Yep, shoot, fire cosmic bolts. Of incredible power.
Oh, yeah. You'll be able to survive in the coldness of space and the hotness of the core of suns or whatever.
And as he tells him, that is when he turns silver. So presumably the silverness is somehow related to withstanding the elements.
Yeah.
Yeah, he encases his body in a silvery shell that absorbs everything he needs from... the cosmos, from cosmic, you know, radiation or rays or the stars, whatever, however you want to look at it, is he absorbs everything he needs through his skin, and then that's also his protection, is that protective shell.
Yeah, and then he gets probably the best power, faster than any spaceship in existence. Which is his surfboard.
A surfboard. Which...
That's how they work.
I mean... It just, this is where I know I knew something about Silver Surfer, because I was like, yeah, Silver Dude flies on a surfboard, travels through space faster than light, and can withstand the elements. That makes total sense. And it wasn't until you were explaining in the intro, Rob, where that came from, that I was like, oh yeah, that's a ridiculous notion. Like, why would it be a surfboard? Why would, what? That doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I must have known enough about Silver Surfer as a kid to be like, yeah, that tracks. That's how you do that.
Yeah, and I liked how they animated the surfboard as coming out of him rather than just being also made by Galactus in order to push visually the idea that the board is kind of a part of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't get it.
That's not the most insidious part of this whole speech.
Duh. Hang on, before we get to that, I just have to check real quick. Do we get a come to me, my board in this episode?
Yes.
It's right after the insidious bit. And I know why you're saying it. I know, and I think I know where you're going here, Troy. But you go ahead.
I was just gonna say, if you're watching Silver Surfer at home, that's a great time to take a drink, because every time Silver Surfer says "Come to me, my board," or not, it's just "To me, my board."
That's it.
Take a shot.
Okay. Yes, you could drink every time. It is one of his famous sayings. So if you were like a big Silver Surfer fan, and he says it, that's the moment when you're like, you know, it's the Avengers Assemble moment is when he says, "To me, my board." I thought you were going to bring up in the Dan Slott comic book, he has sort of a companion who names the board "To me," because she thinks that's the board's name, because he says, to me, my board.
I completely forgot that.
She assumes the surfboard's name is Toomey.
He's like, this is Toomey, my board. Oh my gosh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, what Galactus does is he takes Noran, he takes his memory.
He says something about, like, and your brain shall be a blank slate for me to write upon, or something like that.
Kind of, yeah, but it's not.
This was not part of their agreement.
No, but it's not until the intro, it's not until Uatu the Watcher's intro in the second episode that it's explicitly stated what just happened. Again, if you're a kid watching this, you're not really sure. He just is like, oh, you need planets? Hey, what about that one? And he points that planet. And like in any other thing, like if this were reanimated for adults or whatever, that would be a heartbreaking moment.
Yeah.
Like what an absolute like.
Because he's pointing back at his home.
He points back at his planet. Mom. What a wonderfully written example of showing what he has become now, as he just has no idea, you know. And then Galactus talks about honor, and he knew an honorable guy. Also, that planet's already pretty wrecked, because I don't know what happened, Silver Surfer, but somebody shoved a bunch of metal tubes all over it and, like, destroyed their tectonic plates. So, I mean, that planet's pretty screwed already. Like, they say he saved it, but you see what it looks like in the background when they're on the planet, right? Before Noran Rad goes to Galactus. That planet, I'm going to, do I get two swear tokens?
Go for it.
This episode, that planet's like, I don't know what you consider saved. I guess there's still people on it, but like, if you've done that much destruction to, again, if that planet has tectonic plates or whatever, like, oh, thanks a lot, Noran. Like... It's another Uatu, like, warning you at the after you've already gone over the cliff. Be like, I'll go save us. And you're like, well, you're a little late, but that's it's a nice effort, I guess.
I saved you from the atomic bomb that just went off. Well, kind of.
The atomic bomb went off, but I saved this old man in his 60s by shoving him inside of a refrigerator.
I get that reference.
Thank you.
Now I want to play Fallout New Vegas, because there's a thing where there's this refrigerator and the hat's inside. Yeah. That's anyway.
Yeah, so we're at the end and he's there and he's his memory wiped or something. Do you think that kid's watching that moment when he says, well, what about that planet? And he's like, no, because there was an honorable man. And we're like, you don't care about honor, but sure, let's go with it.
Well, he also says that it's a planet of knowledge or something, and... like he talks about Noran.
Does Galactus talk that up there? I don't remember him talking it up there. I thought he just said he can't do it because he made a promise to an honorable man.
No, he talks about the planet, and he says the man was replaced by another being or something.
He tells him reasons he's sparing it, that he wants the Silver Surfer to completely ignore when finding later planets.
Exactly.
But do you think kids got it? Do you think kids understood until the second episode when it's explicitly stated what happened to him in the narration? Do you think a kid watching it is like, oh, he doesn't know anymore? Or is it, even though it's obvious to us as adults, is it too subtle for them to just be like, oh, we can do planets. Well, what about that planet?
He does use more of that Shakespearean language. So I think it could go over the top of some kids' heads, but I'm sure there is at least a couple, there's got to be some kids out there that would be like, oh, he has no idea who he is or what's going on anymore. He just knows that he's serving Galactus.
I'll speak up as the resident, I'm not getting enough sleep because I have a child and therefore my mind operates like a child's mind expert right now, and say that I didn't understand that was Zen Law the first time I watched this episode. So I think there's probably kids that missed it. Partially because I was holding my baby, so, you know, I'm like watching the screen, but also feeding the kid and all that stuff. But I'm also taking notes at the same time. And I think I looked down and then I looked back up and he was like, what about that plan? And Galactus was like, oh, I made a promise to an honorable man. And I was like, ooh, I wonder what that's referencing. Interesting. Who's the honorable man? And then I realized like right away, but there was a good like 12 seconds where I was like, what's that about? Who does Galactus make deals with? And then I was like, oh, that's okay.
But then you get the second episode to do it. And kids today now, if they're doing it on Disney Plus, it goes straight into the second episode. So
This is a very bingeable show. It is an easy one to just let the next episode play.
To roll. Now, I have one more question, and I think it would apply to the end of this one. I mean, it sort of counts in the second episode as well, but since we're still talking about the first one, was this episode necessary? Or could we have started with him as the Silver Surfer and slowly learn this backstory? Because he ends the episode with no memory. And while that's powerful, could this have been like episode 4 or episode 3 kind of thing, where you start with him already out there doing stuff and being a little bit conflicted, but he doesn't know why, and then he starts getting flashbacks, and then
that's an interesting idea.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you start with this guy with this crazy power, but like he's kind of a bad guy.
I guess that's kind of one of my gripes about episode 2, actually, is that I feel like it. And again, thinking of this being a 90s kids show, it makes sense why it does this, but it feels like it spends a long time recapping what happened in episode 1. So, I mean, you could just go straight into episode 2 and get enough of what's going on. But I think watching it the way that I did, I really liked this episode being first, because you got to see at the start that Norrin Rand was, like, aspired towards peace, and that his whole goal, like, he's like, I'm going to become the surfer, but it's to protect people. Like, that's explicitly the reason I'm doing this, is to protect my people and other people in the galaxy. And you're like, all right, cool dude. And then episode 2, he's like, check out those people, Galactus. Do you want to eat them? Look at them. Yeah. They're probably really tasty. That made that episode heartbreaking for me.
Yeah, you're kind of spoiling the next episode, guys.
I was going to say, let's back it up. But the other thing is the reason of using this origin story first is also the tragedy, which they don't focus on a ton. It's sort of only with the opening exposition, and then there's a couple of lines before he goes out to fight Galactus, is unlike everybody else on the planet, and this is part of the comic book origin as well, is Zenla is a planet of people that do not feel the need to go anywhere.
Right.
They are there to work on peace, and he is an astronomer and a scientist. I'm talking about Norrin Rand here, and his greatest dream is to leave the planet and explore the stars, and all he has is this junky old spaceship that's like an antique because nobody cares anymore. People come to Zenla, and they're there, and they're peaceful, and they're all content, but he's not. Yeah. His whole thing is he needs to go out and explore the universe. So the tragedy there is he does. He gets the ability to explore the universe without the need of a spaceship, without the need of food or air or water. But the tragedy is he only gets to do so by doing the bidding of a great evil.
That's so sad.
It's like joining.
Is this like a metaphor for people who join the military because they want to see the world?
I know. I kind of was going to say it, and I didn't know if I should say it. I don't think it's meant to be that metaphor. But you all keep in mind when the character was created, 1966. Yeah. Now, I can't speak to when his full origin story was explained, so I don't know if it was during Vietnam, you know, that idea of people joining the military because they want to see the world, and then they end up doing horrible things that they never wanted to do based on the bidding. So it has layers if you want it to, right? One way or the other, it's, if you consider it a piece of art, you can interpret it however you want. I don't know that was necessarily, like we said, he wanted another character. When he created Kirby, wanted another character, and he was sick of drawing spaceships, you know. So certainly at its core, that was not the point of the character. But when later writers, or maybe that was Stanley who did that, and Stanley served in the military during World War II.
Yeah.
Though he served making like advertisements and stuff. But
that brought me way down. I had not thought of it in that
I'm
context.
I'm sorry.
But no, that's good, though, because I think it does work in that regard. So
The Silver Surfer has and will always be a tragic character.
Yeah.
Yep.
With that, let's do our best and the worst first. MC, you want to go first with your worst of this episode?
I think the worst part of this episode is there's a bit with the Watcher right after they introduce Galactus, and he's just like an outline.
Mm-hmm.
and it looks ridiculous.
It looks like they just forgot to animate
him. Like... yeah, that, it looks like they forgot to put a scene in there. It's just this white outline and stars, and it looks weird, to be honest.
Yeah, that's an iconic version of the Watcher. Like, I know I've seen that in comic books, but when you're watching a cartoon where everything's in motion and then you see that, it does look a little weird. It's a little, like, flat. Rob, how about you? You got a worst for this episode?
I'm going to say Norm Red yelling at the Watcher.
Yeah.
or maybe the Watcher's terrible warning.
Yeah.
The Watcher's warning ending literally as the thing happens, which means it wasn't a warning. He just wanted the self-satisfaction. He wanted to comfort himself by saying he helped. When he
I definitely interfered this time.
I did the bare minimum.
Yeah, it's like your significant other finishes taking out the trash and you're like, hey, do you need help? I asked, I offered to help. I get credit now.
For some reason, what popped in my head is it's like the George of the Jungle theme song where they're like, watch out for that tree. Oh, never mind.
Ooh.
Never mind.
Yes, the Watcher wrote that song.
George of the Jungle. No, he would be much more. George of the Jungle. Watch out for... Oh, never mind.
I have sworn to never interfere, but that tree...
Can I cheat? I have two worse things. One's short and silly. The outfits on the planet of Zenla are awful. They look so ridiculous. but my real worst one is the sounds that Norrin Rand makes when he's transforming are terrible. I love the Animorphs books where children transform into animals. And one of the things that happens in that book is it's not like magical pixie dust transformation. They talk about hearing their bones breaking and scrunching and their organs sloshing around and slurping and all kinds of stuff. And so I've heard those sounds in my head my whole life because I've been reading the Animorphs books. And then I go and watch Silver Surfer and I'm like, oh, that's what that sounds like, really, because they do a real good job of making all of those sounds happen like at once as his body's being contorted by Galactus. And it was very, very upsetting.
Because he like contorts it and he's like, just kidding, I'm just putting a hard candy shell on you.
Yeah, but something happens internally before that because he gets all kinds of scrunched.
Yeah.
How about best? MC? I'm going to say Morda.
I reckon the look of Galactus is probably the best thing in this episode. Like, he really stands out. It really makes, like, every scene that he's in, it like pops.
Yeah. It's a good design. It's good animation. I like it.
Yeah.
Rob, what do you got?
If we're cheating and doing two, my top one for sure is the end creation. It's that famous shot of the Silver Surfer in Galactus's hand.
Yeah.
As he is created. And it's such a pivotal, iconic thing from the comic book. So seeing that, you know, animated is really nice. And again, the hard candy shell, it melts in your mouth, not in your hand. So he's just fine. I would say and low key my second one is I love the idea of like what's supposed to be, and if they were given more time, like if this was a 2-hour episode, I feel they'd devote even more time to it. The Kree and the Skrull, one, agreeing to try and figure out a peace process, two, mm-hmm. like skipping the peace process and jumping together and working together. And the idea that these are like these two massive galactic empires that hate each other and have for like generations upon generations, they finally come together and all Galactus has to do is hit a button and he pulls a switch and he wipes out all of that progress and all of that.
The two crews are kind of outsiders in this. Societies as well, but
that's true that they're willing to go out and work together. But the idea of they do all of this, they spend all of this time talking about these two peoples sort of coming together, and they're like, I can't believe I'm actually seeing the Kree and the Skrull work together, this is insane. And Galactus is like, oh yeah, how nice, beep, you know, because they're building it up as if not a large military might, very important, like story wise, or they're trying to impress upon you as the audience that this is a very important moment in the history of the universe.
Yeah.
Are these two people finally coming together to work together? And Galactus could not care less. Galactus is completely unfazed by it. He pulls one of his three levers and they're just gone. So like we get people like straight up murdered in episode one.
Yeah. Oh, that's a common cartoon. Thing we found in kids' cartoons. Episode one of Gargoyles starts with genocide, like just right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah. You can only do it in episode one. In episode one, it's okay to kill all of the people.
I'm going to piggyback there because my best thing was that as well. And specifically the line of may you bring honor to the Skrull Mother and may you bring victory to the Kree Supremer. But I'll add one more thought on that, which is so the Kree is the one that says may you bring honor to the Skrull Mother. And the question that I had is like, is he saying a traditional Kree victory speech or a Skrull one? And I think he's saying a Kree victory speech because bring honor sounds more like Kree and bring victory sounds more like Skrull. But I think I like that even better because that means he's not just like co-opting the Skrull's like war cry. He's giving his own war cry to his enemy. And then the Skrull reciprocates in kind by saying that maybe you bring victory to the Kree Supremer. And I like that read on it, that they're so allied in this moment that they're like using their own blessings on their enemies.
And they don't even bother explaining to you who or what the Supremor is.
Right. Doesn't matter in this context. Like you get what they're talking about. I like that a lot.
But it's world building and I like that.
I like that. I like this episode. We are going to be back next week with episode 2, which is probably called Origin of the Silver Surfer Part 2. I just want to check, Rob, are you going to be able to join us on that one? Timing wise here? Okay, cool. Well, then we will be back next week with the Silver Surfer Animated Series Episode 2, The Origin of the Silver Surfer Part 2. Until then, don't change the channel.
Thanks for listening to The Best Animated Shows Ever, so far. Find the show on Twitter at BaseSFCast or email us at BaseSFCast@gmail.com. That's BaseSFCast. Our intro music is Funnin' and Sunnin', and our outro music is Motivator, both by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com and licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks again for listening, and tune in next time.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.